Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. So my guest, I'm very excited to have. She's a friend of mine. She's amazingly accomplished in many, many areas. She's an author of a new book called Risk Forward, which we're going to be talking about today, a fantastic book that I read. She has a really accomplished background in the arts as a performer, as a director, as a producer, and as a consultant to major corporations and teams. It's the likes of Starbucks, Microsoft, Coca-Cola, and also a keynote speaker, and my friend, Victoria Labom. How are you, Victoria?
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this book you wrote, I'm mad at you because you should have written this book when I was transitioning from Wall Street to comedy, because every friggin' thing that I was dealing with, you talk about in this book and have a way to deal with it. And I'm getting chills just talking about it. It's great. Like, you have no idea how many times I've written in this book, me, me. So let's talk about the format of the book first. You have a page in here. It's really, for me, a guide that you can carry around with you. You talk about the way you should read a book, which I've never read in a book. Being told how to read this book, and I'm looking at that, I'm like, why do I need to be told how to read this book? But it says you can read the sections of this book in any order, in any pace, and if one part doesn't speak to you, choose another, focus on those that resonate. You obviously did this intentionally, and what I like about it is it's streamlined, but it's dense. That was obviously the intent. Why did you feel you wanted to present the book that way?
Yeah, I love that question. Well, there are two parts to it. So the streamlined and the dense part of it, that piece, and then I'll go to the order, how to read it in any order.
And not dense in a bad way, like it's meat, but it's not like, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I wanted this to be the kind of book that wasn't overwhelming. I mean, everyone is so busy these days. We all think, a book, it becomes a burden. But this book, it's fun, it's visual. I wanted it to be the kind of book someone could read in literally 90 minutes.
Yes.
But you can then go back again and again. So we spent a lot of energy trimming to make sure that only the most essential elements that would be the most valuable to the reader would be there. And that it was fun and breezy and brief. So that's the trim part. In terms of the read in any order, I myself, you know, I always feel a little locked in when you have an author who's like, don't turn the page until you've done these three exercises. And I feel like I'm a bad girl because I didn't do my homework or something. So I'm like, but I want to turn the page. And I just said, let's break all the rules. Each of the chapters kind of stands alone. Like a friend of mine said, it's like a magic eight ball. You can like flip it open to anywhere and that's the right place to be.
Yeah. And what struck me is the two themes that came through for me are permission. Well, there's several, but two overarching themes are permission to not know and a roadmap in how to live in that space. And for me, that's exactly where I was. I was on Wall Street. I don't want to bore a lot of listeners. They know my story, but just quick recap. And I was doing M&A deals as a lawyer and investment banker. I got bitten by this comedy thing. I started writing jokes. And then I found myself, do I leave to go into comedy? What has happened to me? I always had it figured out. College, high school, college, law school, get a good job, 30 years, partner, retire to Florida. And suddenly my world was upside down. And this book addresses that. And speak to your life experience, what this has been born out of, because I think it would resonate for a lot of people.
Sure, I will. Yeah. The part about the not knowing, just to go into that first, that you had when everything was sort of blown apart once you got into comedy or got bitten. We all go through those moments. And as I say in the book, it could be for minutes, like when you're like, I don't know what's happening. I can't figure out the blog post, or I'm not sure which decision to make, or, you know, I can't figure out which project to work on first. Those are all the moments I'm talking about. So it could be just for minutes, or it could be for weeks, or it could be for months, or sometimes for some of us, it's years. Mm. You know, like the pandemic is definitely a year of not knowing.
Right.
So I am really writing the book for any of those periods in between moments of clarity. Hmm. And so for me, my story, you know, I grew up, I was interested in the arts right from the get-go, and I was doing performance and writing and character work and a little bit of stand-up comedy. Yeah. And I was picked up by a manager in Hollywood who managed Robin Williams and Billy Crystal, and he'd help me mostly as a hip pocketer, you know.
Is that David, is that Steinberg?
Yeah, it was at MBST.
I know him.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, so he submitted me for SNL auditions and for Mad TV, and he got me in the Toyota Comedy Festival. And, you know, I did my show at HBO's comedy space out in LA, the theater there, Workspace Theater. And
look at you. You were like hot.
Yeah,
those
I was.
Are all
I was
the,
sort of,
that,
yeah.
You were buzzing, man. I wasn't in it yet, but that those are all things like I was going to and watching and seeing the Toyota Comedy Festival. Yeah.
I mean, I was performing down at a place called Luna Lounge and Louis.
Yeah, I did Luna. Yeah.
And Michael O'Brien. Remember Michael O'Brien? So these are all names.
He's a good friend. Oh, we got drunk together. I remember now. We were crazy. We were driving around the city. No. Yes, Michael O'Brien was my publicist for a while.
We don't want to bore the listeners because we'll talk about that later.
But forget the listeners. Forget that. All right, go ahead.
For anyone listening, like there are times in your life when you've got a lot of different things going on and interests and you're not sure how it's going to work out or where it's going to go. And whether that's because you're just getting out of college or whether that's because you're a senior and you're kind of going through a later life transition, whether you're in a divorce or a health crisis, whether you're between careers, all of those moments, I was in that place for a long time because I wasn't sure what was next and how it was going to work out. And when you're in the arts, which you and I are, Paul, you know, people are like, what, how are you going to make money or how's that going to work out? And I'm sure you faced that leaving Wall Street.
You talk about that. It's called Voices in the Book. You talk about the, which I experienced also.
Totally. Yeah. And we all have that when we start something new. We have that idea and someone's like, well, what's the plan with that? Where's the goal? And you're not sure yet. And I really suffered. I thought like, gosh, if I don't have a plan and a goal, am I a loser? Am I never going to make it? But the story in the book, which I won't reveal all of so that we keep it a surprise for the reader, is just that little by little, one thing led to the next. And the secret is just that so many successful people I've learned, because I've worked with CEOs and I've worked with top entrepreneurs and I work with top artists and all other populations from scientists to students and consultants to creatives. And in that, I've learned like a lot of successful people didn't have a plan either.
Right. And that was what kind of blew me away in the book. And by the way, this book is, you guys sent this to me, but I've got two more ordered for my son and for my wife. And I'm going to order a third for my best friend, Stephen, who is an entrepreneur and went through the same thing. He was second year in college and decided to start his own business. And his father, who was a cop, and his mother was a nurse, and his father was like, that's not a job. You got to go get a job. So all of those, what you call voices, people like, do you have a plan? What's wrong with you? Were you scared during that time? I mean, because I know the feeling, there's this pull and you said it starts like in minutes. That's what happened to me. Like, oh, I'll just write this joke. And then I wrote another, and then it's three jokes and then it's 10 jokes. But as you were getting pulled, did you feel scared that you were in the unknown? Because I was scared. Like I was confused. I felt like I was having a midlife crisis in my late 20s. And I don't know if you had the same experience, but this speaks to that. And
I definitely feel the fear at times, like more so, I think, as you get older almost, because you feel like you've got more at stake. I think at that time in my 20s, it was still that permissible window to kind of be a little bit exploratory. But I definitely had sadness and fear only because my friends were getting married. They were having stable jobs. They were having homes, husbands, babies. And I just had none of those, you know, and people gave me a really hard time. I mostly kind of felt sad about that. But then I did have a little bit of worry, like, gosh, is there something wrong with me? Like, what if I'm screwing up? And that's that is the fear you're talking about.
And this is the kind of guidance that came out of your speaking engagements. People started to resonate, that started to resonate with people. And you've given people guidance in this. But you say about this quote, one quote that you have in the book on page 2, I believe, for many years, I suffered under a myth that unless I was clear and had a plan, I could not succeed. I often made choices that others thought were odd. It seemed to veer off from the path. And then this is where I wrote, yes, me, I feel that way. And I couldn't explain why, except that it seemed right. And seeming right is another big theme in here, which you go with your instinct, trust your gut. And I think a lot of people have trouble doing that. And I know I did for a while and sometimes still do. Why do you think that is? And what guidance do you give people when they do have that trouble?
Yeah, I think it begins with starting to get as much of the sense as you can about what really matters to you, sort of what game you're playing. You know, if your number one goal is to make as much money as possible, you might make different choices than if your number one goal is to try new things, you know?
Right.
And not that those are mutually exclusive at all. And in fact, sometimes they're perfectly in sync. But sometimes we get in trouble when we adopt a different game for our own.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, even for me, for example, writing this book, it was a departure from my business career. You know, right. I started as a creative, then I went into business and consulting and speaking professionally and working with corporations and all along still doing the arts, you know, producing a documentary film on the Muppets and performing in different venues and bringing art to my work. But when I had the opportunity to write a book, I could have written the book of all the business strategies. But I decided instead to do something that had those a little bit, but really more of a book that was not to business, but business to consumer, really to help individuals around the world. That was a risk.
Yeah.
You know, and, huge risk.
Yeah. And but it also, to me, is a book. The reason it's so great is I don't think people who are in business just have to get this book. I think that people find their lives, you know, I thought I was in love with this person, but I'm not. I thought I was straight, but I'm gay. Like, I could see the general applications of this book. And I would imagine in speaking to groups, it's touching people in that way too, right?
Oh, yeah. And I probably misworded my comment a moment ago because I meant it's not necessarily at this point for that community only. It's really meant for exactly the population you said, or I have... you know, Dickie Smothers, the great comedian, the Smothers Brothers, he sent me a text. I sent him an early, early edition, like the black and white galley. It's called a galley when you make a book. They send you a black and white, like rough floppy copy just to show an early version of what it's going to look like. And this book is full color and lots of illustrations. And so I sent him a galley early on. He said, he texted me back and he said, this is like the perfect book for my life. And he's 81.
It's right? Amazing.
And then I have a 23-year-old assistant who said, this book is something every graduate should read and everyone in between. So it's really for the human soul.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, you talk about the fog of not knowing, which we were just talking about, and you give examples in the book, which people have to see. And this feeling of, you know, that you say you found yourself in a profound phase of uncertainty, which we talked about, what, and you, you know, saying things to yourself like, what now, what's next? And then you talk about the gap in between, it's called finding our way, and the gap in between what is said and what could be. And I thought that was such a beautiful and profound way of putting it, but I'm a little unclear. What do you mean by that gap? What is that space?
Yeah, I'm so glad you're calling that out. There's this misconception that many people have, that I had, that I hear a lot of people having, which is that we have to start with clarity. And people often say, okay, you got to be clear before you go. You really have to start with clarity. Okay, step one is clarity. Then, and really the argument I'm making in that section is clarity is where we arrive. Clarity is not the place from which we begin, but the place at which we ultimately arrive. And that comes in the next page from the one you're referring to. And what I'm talking about is we often begin with a bunch of fuzzy ideas, concepts. I mean, if you're writing a novel or if you're facing a business challenge and you're trying to redo your website or you're figuring out your next year, you have a bunch of assorted thoughts in your head and it's not yet clear. That, and you're in that gap. You're like, it's not yet formed. And it's between, it's in that gap between that kind of bunch of ideas and the clarity that we find our way. And the mistake that people make, well, it's two. Number one, they think it's wrong to be in that gap. And number two, because they think it's wrong, they try to get out as quickly as possible at the expense of a great decision in their own lives. So a couple examples would be, you know, you're not sure how it's going to work out with the relationships. You're feeling pressure. It's 29. You're 29 and you're thinking, I better get married by 30. I'll just marry her or him. And then that's it, right? People do this with business decisions, you know, or creative decisions.
Yeah. And you talk about that in the book. And what happens, do you find, when people don't? Because you say that that in-between gap, that uncertainty, should not only should you not run from it, it should be honored and respected. And I never put it that, again, I'm getting chills saying that, because I was running from it. I was fighting it. I stopped doing it for a while. I quit completely. I left Wall Street. I went back to another firm, Swaroff comedy. And then I realized, I mean, it's a cliche, but what came through here is that phrase, I didn't pick it, it picked me. And I had to catch up to that. And it took, and I was really like, I felt in terms of ability, I could do law, I could do comedy, I could do, and none of it felt right at the time, even once I started doing comedy. And I felt like I had these two howitzers loaded and ready to shoot, and I didn't know where to shoot them. And it was the most fearful part of my life ever, because I think that feeling lost is one of the loneliest, scariest places to be. And what this book does, it's a practical guide, but it's also an emotional, uplifting book, because it says, it's okay. We're all there. And not only is it okay, it's good, because you're going to end up in the place you should end up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I was just speaking with a colleague of mine who was facing a decision and in that fearful place of not knowing. And she said the book really changed her, because when she got it, the first thing she felt is, okay, it's okay not to know. Like, okay. So that was the first relief, like the embracing of the fog. Like, all right.
Right.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then that second phase of like, oh, it's actually full of possibility. It's ripe. It's fertile. It's full of promise, as I say. And then the next phase, as she went through these prompts and principles, and for anyone watching this or listening, there are 35 chapters in the book, but each one is like a page or half a page or two pages. So they're super short. And you can read them, as we said, in any order. And she just flipped through and she kept going through it. And she said, over the course of these different prompts, she started to have this new clarity arrive. And she was about to hand it off to someone else to figure out. She was about to just go back to what she was doing, but she hung in there.
Yeah.
And as a result, she is so jazzed now. So that made me happy.
Yeah. You got a great story in there about Stu McLaren. I'll let people see it, but you've got some really great, that's the other thing, is that you've got real world examples. This is not esoteric or theoretical. It's like this works, you know, or the problems that people have are real. You talk about the forces against originality. I don't want to give too much of the book away, and there's four of them. But one that I have suffered from and still do at times is, I just would like to talk about one, is called keeping up, and that I'm running that race. And for me, part of the problem was early on, I was trying to keep up with the old me. I was trying to keep up with the Wall Street me. So what was happening was like, okay, I got this. I got a writing job on The Daily Show, but I'm still not making as much money as I would be if I were vice president at Bear Stearns, blah, 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 blah. And there was no way I was going to win that race. And it was getting in the way of my creativity. And then I find, and I'm much better at it, but you know, oh, that comic got this. Why didn't I get that? Or I need to get that now. Is that one of the biggest obstacles that just generally people face? And again, I don't think it's relegated to business. I think in life, you know, like you said, my friends are getting married. I got to, you know, that our kids, are you finding that that's a big, big thing in people's lives? And how do you disconnect from that?
Yeah, I think it's a big thing in everyone's life, and certainly mine. I mean, I struggled with it at times. I still do. And that's why I wrote the book. I mean, I don't want to make anyone think that I'm the queen of having it all figured out. And I say that very clearly in the book. You know, I never ever want to be one of those like, I know it all. What I really want to do is debunk the myth that anyone has it completely all together, and make us all a little more connected that way. Sort of take that barrier down. But for sure, I think there's so much competition in our head, and we look around, and it's never how any of us has done our best work. I mean, honestly, if anyone listening to this or watching thinks back to some of the best things you've done, whatever that was, how you decorated your room or some creative idea you wrote down or some project you started or idea you came up with for how you run your team or your business or your family or your friendship, that's all from you. It's not from looking around. Yeah. Now, we can learn from others. Certainly, we can learn and implement some strategies others have done. Like, oh, that worked for them. I'm going to try it. But where it becomes dangerous is when it becomes competitive or comparative. And then we're really kind of not listening to what's true to us.
Right.
And what's our own hidden genius. We're just kind of trying to adopt other people's.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because it's so hard because one of the myths, there's five myths which are really great. And one of them is the followers.
I'm so glad okay? you picked that one.
And I can't, listen, if I didn't have to do social media because of what I do, I wouldn't. And I am, I had to stop, like, how many followers? He's got that many followers. She's got that. What do I, maybe I should do that. Oh, wait, he's putting a banana in his ear. Maybe I should do that. That got 15,000 hits. Like, how in a society that generally, going back to the 50s, we've always been, you know, we're a capitalist society. What have you got compared to somebody? Then you introduce social media, which makes you crazy. And also, I'm not as popular as so-and-so. These high school kids suffer from this. How do you help people navigate that? How do you keep that noise out?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, number one, wherever we go, there's always more. And there's a diagram in the book on that page, because you could have 10 followers and you're like, dang, I just started and I have 10 in 10 minutes. And right. then you're like, oh, well, I have 100. And suddenly 10's not good anymore. You're like, I want 200. Right. And it's just never ending. It's like that with money. You know, right. people get to the $1 million mark or the $100,000 mark, and then they want more and more and more. And it's, so I think it's number one, knowing that that game's always going to be there. Someone's always going to have a bigger following.
Right.
Number one. Number two, it's like, it's not really the size. I mean, it's, and I've seen people who have a lot of followers, and then you look at a post and the engagement and it's really low. And it really shows that those followers are not really listening right. or paying attention. They're just kind of there. Right. Maybe some are even bought from the old days.
Yeah.
So that's the second thing. And then the third that's most important of all, and I address this in a profound way at the end of the book, is that you really don't know who you're influencing, you know? And
it's true. Yeah.
You could have the biggest number of followers, but, you know, not really being affected. And you could have one out of 10 who just goes on to do something really extraordinary because right. of you.
Right. Yeah. And I think these myths, these distractions, these forces that you talk about are all not intentionally, but in some way designed to get you off that path that you're saying we should be on. By the way, you talk about, you have a phrase, risk forward. And if people want to get the book, it's riskforward.com/book. Get a half dozen, because you're going to read it. And so you need to read this, but you don't want to give it away, because this is like, by the way, it's a good size too. You like can carry it around and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like a Moleskine journal size.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't have to bookmark it like a crazy person like me, but talk about, again, you know, there's a lot more to this stuff that we're talking about in the book, obviously, but it's two words, but it really summarizes it a lot. This idea of risk forward, and just where that phrase came from for you, and what that means in the context of this, and obviously the name of the book,
right? You know, sometimes people misinterpret the title or the message because they haven't read it yet. Obviously, it's not yet officially, when we're recording this, it's not officially out yet. So people sort of hear about it. It'll be out very soon. So depending on when whoever's listening to this is, it's probably already out. So what people think of it as is, you know, leap and go for it and, you know, charge ahead. And it's really more about how do you go forward when you're not even sure where you're going? It's not about, you know, go for the goal. Sometimes you're not even sure what that outcome is. And I think so much of the time in life, we don't know. The opening line of the book is, some people in life know exactly what they want to achieve. This is a book for the rest of us.
Yeah.
And risk forward is really coming off of, as I learned years ago, this term risque. Avant, which is a French term, risk in advance, risque avant, which this great French mime who I worked with, Marcel Marceau.
Which, by the way, I'm like, she worked with Marcel Marceau. It's so great when you read it in the book. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry,
that's okay.
I got too excited.
So he had a huge influence on my life. I studied with him for a number of rounds and presented new work under him, not on his stage, but just as his mentorship, mentee. And I shouldn't say that. It makes it sound like I was his only mentee. No, I was a pupil in his class, but he had a big influence, and he would always say risque avant. And it was this type of movement where you were arched open, and I will sort of do it here with the frame that I have, but you're sort of arched open like the sail of a boat with your weight forward and your heart exposed, and almost like you were getting pulled forward, that kind of feeling of momentum. And I came to think of that as a philosophy for life. Like, how can we be risking forward? I then coined it and trademarked it, risk forward, not really what he meant. He meant risk in advance. And I thought of it as risk forward. How do we go forward risking, not knowing, and find our way?
Yeah. And that idea of pulling resonated with me because, as I said, I found I was pulled by comedy. Like, people always say, well, you must have, you know, you were making good money, but you must just hated the Wall Street. I go, no, you know, actually, I was working on these huge merger deals. It was really challenging. And it's not all the Gordon Gekko mean. They're actually a lot of really fundamentally nice human beings that are really smart. It was more an attraction to this thing that was pulling me. So that idea of pull was right there at the fingertips for me. And you talk about, it comes up a lot to me, of being present. By being present, you can be aware of opportunities that you might not otherwise. And touch on that a little bit, because that really, I think I had a problem with that at some point too, because I was always like, I got to be my Wall Street guy again, or well, that guy's doing this, or I should have this credit, or I should, you know, I was all over the place. So
you and all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what happens too is we, and there's a section of the book where I talk about goals, and it's in that myth section that you referenced, where I do think when we're too focused on those goals, then we do miss those opportunities because things present themselves unexpectedly. Like, comedy comes along and you think, wow, this is kind of pulling me forward. And if we block that, which a lot of people do, we dismiss it. And that is what I call your hidden genius. Like, those wisps that pull, that flicker, like, those things are worth paying attention to. And I guarantee you, everyone listening to this has had some great experiences in their life that did not result from a goal.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Some of the best experiences of your life were not the result of a goal.
This is going to sound silly, but I was in the Boy Scout. I was at the Boys Club and I was 13, and we had to sell tickets for a cancer fund. And I just went around and I just said, I'm going to sell tickets, knocking on doors and selling tickets, you know. And I just, all I cared about was just selling tickets, selling as many tickets as I could to raise as much money as I could. And I didn't realize that there was a prize for the person who sold the most tickets. And one day I got surprised and I got a wearing green blender from my mother. And that stays with me because I know if I were focused on the blender, oh, there's a thing at the end of this, and blah, blah, I don't know that I would have done as well.
Yeah.
There was a purity in my act. Not that I'm a saint, but you know what I mean? Like, and I think that comes through a lot in the book too, is like, do it for its sake, and kind of, at least what I'm taking from it. And that's the other great thing about the book. You're all going to take similar things from this book, but you're all, based in context of your own life, take a different thing from this book. And one of the things I took is, you know, if things will come to you if you stay true to that sort of, you know, uncertainty and finding and exploring and going, because you talk about next steps, next moves is another section of the book that's really helpful. And I think that comes through in the book a lot, like, just be there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really glad you called that out. I mean, there is some sports psychology out there for different athletes, where when they focus on sort of the goals, or literally like a goal, like, you know, the goal post, or the goal, they don't perform as well.
Right.
And if they focus on just executing and doing their great work as an athlete, they have better results. I mean, Evan Lysacek, whose name you may remember, was a skater who won the gold medal. I remember watching him being interviewed. This is years ago in the Olympics. And someone said, were you going for the gold? Did you want the gold? He said, no, I just wanted to skate the best I could.
Wow.
And I love that. And, you know, we have also all had experiences in our life. And this is the piece about the next step, where you take that next step because it's the right step, even if you don't know where it's going to lead.
That's so hard, though.
I know.
You know?
It is hard.
It's like, can I, you know, And what do people do when they find it hard? Like, how do you recommend people get through that? I mean, the book touches on it, but like, just in your experience, when you're faced with this, the fear of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of what I call micro risks. So, you know, let's say you think, oh, gosh, I'd love to start a bakery. So, you know, make a few cakes at home. Just start small. Don't have to announce that. This is where that whole big, hairy goal, go for your dreams, I think screws us up. Because then you're like, I'm going to sell my home. I'm going to buy a bakery. That works out for a few. That's kind of like the textbook storybook thing, but not for everyone. So I say, start at home.
Right.
You know, and see how it goes. And you might discover you don't even like it.
You have a great story in the book about the woman with the picture. There's a really great story about that.
Yes, exactly. And for her, it worked out really well. But sometimes, like, I thought I wanted to do a bakery years ago when I got out of college. I was living in Santa Fe and I loved cookies and I loved baking cookies. And I was like, I'm going to start this business called The Occasional Treat, and I will service like events that run occasions, like a museum opening or a theater opening, and I will make cookies and cakes for the reception. I thought it was brilliant. And it was Santa Fe and it was the summer, and I started cooking cookies and I had all these trays. And within a day, I was like, this in the heat with these trays of hot cookies is so not my thing.
That's hilarious. But you knew, but you tried it and you eliminated something.
Yeah. And honestly, the same thing with stand-up comedy. Like, it's not my thing. I'm funny, but I'm not a stand-up.
Right. How, there's a thing called Inner Current, which I want to leave for people to read, but it's tied into this. How do you know when you're off it, when you're not on this sort of path?
Well, I'm going to open this up and maybe you have the page too. I'm just going to show people, by the way, what it looks like inside. So we've been talking about it. So
it's totally,
as we said,
cool.
It's very small. It's very slim. And
I love the little drawings.
This is what it looks like inside. So it's full color.
And you've got these little guys with these little sayings, which are really awesome.
Yeah. This is my trademark character. And they kind of go along through the book and they make little comments and add little funny points. And they sometimes ask
or punctuate what you're saying on that page. Right.
Yeah. And so this Inner Current page, and this is the chapter, Your Inner Current.
Yep.
Each page has different visuals. So I talk about the inner current like this energy that goes through a tree or that goes through a river. And I share the types of feelings that you would have when you know you're off it. And then the types of feelings you know or you have when you know you're on it. And so to answer your question, Paul, when you know you're off it, it's like when you're feeling this sense of dread or you're disinterested, you're lacking energy. Those are all signs that you might be off your inner current. Now, of course, if you're lacking energy because you're sick, that's a separate thing. But I'm talking about over the course of projects, you know, over the course of decisions, if you're like, this is just not feeling the right way.
Yeah.
Those are worth honoring.
Yeah. And the counter to that is you have adjectives that describe when you are on it, engaged, intrigued, curious, et cetera. You know, I've been working with a gentleman that he's sort of helping me. Sometimes I feel lost. What's my next thing? You know, and he's helping me get comfortable going back to not knowing. He goes, your problem is you're not comfortable not knowing. And I really should introduce you to, because he's a therapist. But you are coming at it from two different places, but arriving at the same place. And it was, you know, and these voices of like, don't do this, or it's too scary. He calls that the ego. He calls the ego the AI, is AI run amok. The ego designed initially is to keep the child, literally as a child, from burning itself, to protect it. But the ego wants to stay in power. So it starts to become like it's his own monster that keeps you in place by scaring the adult. Don't do that. You're not going to have money. And those are all the things. And then you talk about, I mean, just this page alone, like, was it's about pressures, and you list the pressures and then the effect. And you're like, this is what I like about the book, because it's so like matter of fact. Oh yeah, but it's very succinct, and you can tell it's very. There was a lot of work writing this book because it's very precise. No words are wasted, and the impact is really, really strong. You know, as opposed to a 400-page, you know, and you just can't get through it because you feel like this doesn't feel like a homework assignment, you know, which is nice, which I assume you probably had experience reading in the past and you didn't want to do that, right?
Exactly that. Yeah. I wanted people to pick it up, look at it and go, this looks fun. This looks accessible.
Yeah. There's a thing called the Crimson Star that you talk about, and you say, it's a really beautiful quote, trust that light that flickers across your soul. And sometimes I think people have trouble seeing what that light is, right?
Yeah.
And how does one, because someone watching this or listening to this go, yeah, I'm not where I think I want to be, but I don't know where I want to be. What do they do? What's the first step that they can take?
The first step is really to go to the previous chapter just before that. And there's something I call the four questions. And there are four questions that I ask people. I've asked people around the world. And they all kind of bring you to home. They're all different ways to get at what is maybe the possible next step for you.
Right.
And when you go through those, there'll be overlaps because they're all different ways of coming at the same answer. But they've really helped people. And if you're honest in answering them, and even if you're just honest with yourself, which is sometimes hard in and of itself, but you don't have to tell anyone. And you can, you know, we have a resource center in the book, because meaning outside the book, so we didn't want to make the book too full. So we have some online resources that you can get after you get the book. There's a link. We're going to have some worksheets there. And so people can kind of brainstorm a little bit. It's that kind of what's the honest answer for you? And then, as I say later in the book, to be careful who you share those answers with, because when you start to share answers too soon, they can get crushed. I won't go into that whole chapter.
No, or to the wrong people.
Exactly, or to the wrong people.
Right.
So I call those new ideas, they're like seeds, you know?
Yeah.
And there's more on sort of what to do, what not to do with those new ideas.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, why do you think there are so many, maybe negative isn't the right word, but those voices of you can't, you shouldn't, stay where you are. Is it envy on their part that they aren't going for it, or they're not following their soul? There seem to be a lot of folks out there like that. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, yeah, often. I mean, I think they're somehow thinking they'll protect you.
Right.
Or they don't want you to have that for those reasons unconsciously. Yeah. You know, it's like when I wasn't married, everyone kept saying to me, when are you going to get married? And I think they just wanted me to join their club. you know?
Join the pain. Join the, come and experience the pain.
Right?
Yeah.
I didn't get married.
Yeah, it's harder on women. I think that, and why don't you have kids? I think that I was getting it a little bit because all of our friends got married in their 20s and we were into our 30s. Carol and I, you know, Carol, and we've been together since high school. And they were like, well, now this comedy thing now? And I was like, dude, I'm beating myself up enough, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So so listen.
To answer your question, I don't know. I think it's partly people want to protect you, partly it's their own jealousy. And then we internalize that. So it's ultimately, and this is what the book is about really listening to ourselves and finding
it really
our
is.
Original way forward.
I mean, I have a thing here called, I wrote intuition right there. You see that? That's a big thing. And I highlight it because that's your choice may make no sense to others and even at times to yourself, but there's greater wisdom at work that has its own internal logic.
Yeah.
And that for me was, Carol's always been good at that, my wife. Like she's just, you know, things are meant to be. She goes with the river. This guy, Peter, that I told you, the therapist I talked to, he goes, there's a river, man. He goes, my job on the side of the river is you're fighting the river sometimes, right? The river's going to take you where the river wants to take you. And I'm just yelling, turn around. It'll be easier. I'm telling you. I got to introduce you two guys because you're talking about the same stuff. So the book is Risk Forward. People should go to riskforward.com/book. It's really fantastic. It's a great read. You can come back on. We could talk more about it once the book is officially out.
Yeah.
There's so much more to talk about. We don't want to give too much away, but there's the myths. There's the myth of goals. There's Carol running by going to the bathroom right now, pretending like I didn't see her. There's the courage and the unknown. You talk about also a recurring theme. So it's really great. And I'm so happy for you, and it's congratulations on the book. And it's an important book. You're doing important stuff because you can help people I was in the position and that you talk about. And I think this is going to really help people a lot.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that. Whenever you're listening to this, whoever's listening, whenever it is available, whether, you know, it's coming out very soon from the moment we're recording this. So it'll be on its way. So order it now, order it when you can, because it's special. And
yeah.
I'm so proud to be part of this show with you, Paul. I'm so glad that it touched you and grateful to you for inviting me to share a bit more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's great. And we can talk more about it, too, down the road if you want. So
love it.
Risk Forward. Go get the book, everybody. It'll help you. Thanks, Victoria. Great to have you on.
Thank you, Paul.